As the numbers of infection remain more or less steady in Victoria this week, and a vaccine cure, as we've heard, is a little way off anyway, some are asking if it's time to pursue a different strategy, one that centres instead on acceptable risks, a sort of new aspect to the discussion. In the Australian Financial Review this week, Professor Shitish Kapoor, Dean of the Faculty of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Sciences at the University of Melbourne, wrote that we've tried both a national lockdown and a state lockdown, and neither have resulted in elimination. He wondered whether it was time to consider a Plan C and to start a different type of conversation. Well, to spell out what that might look like, Professor Kapoor joins me now. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you, Geraldine. Thank you for having me.
Let's look first at where Australia's antivirus strategy has succeeded. You say the national lockdown did deliver a successful result.
Yes, and I think, you know, as we contemplate our situation today, we should see that we're coming from a position of strength and success if you look around the world. You know, some 180 nations have tried lockdowns. We're the only one which, as a result of lockdown, got almost six of our states and territories very close to elimination. Now, we didn't get that all over the country, and I realize maybe one or two countries have managed to do that for now. So first thing is, I think that our Plan A, which was the national plan, has put us in a good place. But that then led to this, you know, second wave in Victoria. And I think if you look at the Victorian numbers now, they're decidedly coming down. Now, they're not where we would like them, but there's no question the public health response and the public's cooperation with that public health response is working. What that article that I wrote tried to deal with is where will we be on September 13.
Your plan, you're saying that was effectively Plan B. Is that what you're...
Yes.
Right.
So the Plan A, you could call it the Scott Morrison, Brendan Murphy plan, right there from the front, leading the nation. And then you could say, you know, Plan B is the Dan Andrews, Brett Sutton, who's our chief medical officer here in Victoria. And they've been leading it from the front. And I think they'll do a good job. And my prediction, and look, all predictions are fraught, but I'd be happy to see where it stands on the 13th of September. I think the numbers will be low, but they won't be what the epidemiologists would say are elimination. In other words, there'd be some virus still going around. And the big dilemma we'll then have on September 13 is, do you now just continue this lockdown in the search for the holy grail of elimination? Or do you, as much of the rest of the world, even much of the rest of the Western developed world, has come to accept, just accept a low level of manageable transmission? And that was my suggestion, that might need to be the Plan C, an acceptance of a low level of manageable transmission.
What you also said in the article is that if this is so, we need to find a way to have a discussion with Australians about what is our appetite for acceptable risk. And you had this interesting phrase, health at all costs is neither achievable nor affordable. Now, coming from a dean of medicine, that was an interesting statement.
Could I add another alliteration to it? I would say it's neither achievable nor affordable, but dare I say, nor even advisable. You know, our entire well-being is not just about our physical health. There is a richness to human existence, which has in it social relationships, which has in it culture, it has in it faith. So, I think there's a very important place of health, but I think we have to put it in the right context. So what I was trying to say in that article is that it is not, however, for medics or professors to decide what is an acceptable level of risk. That's a broader social dialogue. And I feel that up to now, the politicians have really led a war from the front, which has been a crusade of elimination. And look, I wish that were to become successful, because that would at least solve one set of problems, though, as we've seen in New Zealand, elimination leads to another set of problems. But I fear that for Victoria, by September 13, that may not be possible. And that will then force us as Victorians first, but really broadly as a nation, to face this question.
So what are some of the features that you would suggest of a reasonable Plan C?
So I think first, the reasonable Plan C would have to pragmatically accept that this is not just an incident. This is now going to be our new condition. So what does that mean? So rather than every day at 11 o'clock, the poor prime minister and the CMO or the premier and the state health officer having to come and defend the news conference as if, you know, it's a fire we're going to put out in the next week, we've got to realize that this is probably a serious and endemic but manageable infection. And it requires a very complex and nuanced response. But there isn't the need or the value of coming out every day holding news conferences followed by, you know, a flurry of articles and condemnation, etc. So in other words, this needs to go into a different mode of management, not to take away from its importance and not to take away from the responsibility of government and transparency of decisions. What I think the politicians should be engaging us in is what is the equation of risk? What are we as a nation and a community willing to trade? And the big trade here is the following. If you look at the impact of COVID in Australia, for half the Australians who are younger than 40, it has meant two deaths. And during that time of COVID, amongst that very group of Australians, 200 of them have died in traffic accidents, even though we're traveling much less than we usually do. So that just gives you a sense of scale. Now, on the other hand, for the older Australians, 40 and above, but even more so perhaps for the 60 and above, and even more so for 60 with multiple medical conditions, look, the risk is much higher. And in some cases, it is even as high as 1 in 10. So here we have this challenge that the risk is very differently distributed. So when I talk about an appetite for risk, it isn't a single number, if it's the two populations the other way around. But then if I flip the other risk and I look at the risk of unemployment and loss of livelihood, there the equation is entirely reversed. Those who are under 40 and working, so let's say 20 to 40, almost 1 in 10 of them have lost their livelihood, even under job keepers. And, you know, one can only imagine what happens job keepers goes. So this is a very complex balancing of risks to lives, risks to livelihoods, which are being borne by different parts of our community. And that's the dialogue that the politicians have to lead.
Which is a tricky one because we've had not much experience in this. And added to this, as one of my colleagues said, there's so much about this disease we're finding out about. And, you know, the story on the 7:30 report of the young medical specialist who was young, 33, I think he was, who became very, very ill. Fortunately, his wife, who was a doctor, recognised it, put on a ventilator. He's okay now, but it was a huge shock. So how do you factor that in, that sense that we're dealing with something we don't fully understand, but then I don't suppose we understand heart disease either, do we?
Yes, and look, there's the good thing about the Australian response. We have had a fair input of medical science and medical information into our decision making. But my proposition would be that in the end, these are not mere technical decisions. These are decisions about societal values. And the forum for that is not a scientific paper. It's our public dialogue. And so, in other words, no one will be able to solve this by giving us the perfect equation for Australia. It's a dialogue Australians have to talk amongst themselves and come to, and it may well keep changing. But, you know, what may seem like the right answer before the vaccine is around may actually change after the vaccine comes around. And if I can add a particular Australian complication, that, you know, if we were a country all by ourselves, this would be a complex dialogue, but still at least it'd be one dialogue. I think our unique Australian challenge is that we have six clearly defined jurisdictions who, for all intents and purposes, have pretty much eliminated the virus. So how the two states that haven't interact with the other six, and how we run a country on two different speeds or two different sets of rules, and is another Big question.
Well, you do align it with the sorts of debates we have around bushfires, which are far more complicated, really, in its own way, and we've developed very good abilities there. Finally, you say Plan C will require a shift in political stance, operational strategy, and public acceptance. Whose responsibility is it to start this type of more complex debate?
I think leadership. The academics and editorials might, like mine, can provide triggers. But finally, it's dialogue. And this is, of course, a historic moment in our lives. And I've been going back to the world wars. And I was actually, wondering, where did Winston Churchill actually give those stirring speeches? And I went back and looked, most of them were in the House of Commons. So in other words, this is why we have a democratic society. It has the mechanism and means of having these discussions. And I'm beginning to think that maybe the forum for this discussion and dialogue needs to move to where it belongs in societies like ours, is not in front of a doorstop, news conference, but perhaps in the halls of our parliament. And as I said, I don't know the answer, and I don't think it is for either the deans of medicine or the professors of economics to give the answer. We can provide perspectives, we can bring data, but finally, it's the entire community.
Look, thank you very much indeed for joining us and outlining that approach.
Thank you so much, Geraldine. Thank you for having me.
Professor Shitish Kapoor, Dean of the Faculty of Medicine, Dentistry and Health Sciences at the University of Melbourne, and I think we're posting a link to his article. It's in the Financial Review this week.